Okay, today we're starting the 11th perek, Daf Kuf Lamed Hey, Reshit Hagez. Okay, Reshit Hagez is a halacha. It's, you would think, what does it sound like? So you're supposed to take, when you shear the sheep, you're supposed to take the first shearings to the Kohen. It sounds like you only have to take the first time you shear your sheep, right? But it's not. Even though it says Reshit, Reshit often is understood as the best and not the first. So they say that what it means is every time you do a shearing, you have to take a part of it and give it to the Kohen. Okay, it's not just the first. So that's the first misinterpretation you might have.
Can I just say something totally irrelevant? I think it's nice that the parak is starting with Reshit because tonight the Bereshit is landing on the moon.
Ah.
And it's a very exciting moment.
So appropriate connection to modern day events. Yefeh. Okay, the Rambam, I wanted to just read you the Rambam in Hilchot Bechorim. He talks about in Perek, the 10th Perek, Halacha Hey. He says a very nice thing. Okay, first of all, maybe I should just read you the Pasuk first. The Pasuk is in the context of Trumot Masrot. Reshit digancha tiroshcha v'yitzarecha. The first you're supposed to give to the Kohen, the Trumot. Ureshit gez tzoncha titein lo. And you should also give him the first of your shearing. So it connects it with Truma. So the Rambam says here, Kevan shezikalo kadosh baruch hu b'trumot, shehen lachmo v'yeno. In other words, since the God gave the Kohanim the trumot, right, he designated, you're supposed to give them the truma, which is his bread and his wine. It doesn't say your olives also, but your oil. Vizikalo b'matanot, that was last perek, behema, right, the matanot behema, the kodshe mikdash, and all the meat that he gets from the korbanot, shavasar shelo, that's his meat. So he gets his wine, right, and his bread and his oil from Truma. He gets his meat from the Matnot Be'ema and the Kodshim. Also, Zikalo Bereshit Hagez Lelevusho. He needs clothes. Where's he going to get clothes to wear? From the first of the shearings. And then, what about everything else? So the Rambam now clumps everything else together. Begezel Hager, remember, someone steals from a ger and they don't have Yorshim to pay back to. They die and they don't have Yorshim. So that goes to the Kohen. And the Charamim, if people are Machrim, this will be Hekdesh, right? The Cherem goes to the Kohen. Usteach Huzah, Upidyom Bechorot. Okay, so all these other things. That's the Hotzotav Ushar Tzrachav. Sharei Ein Lo Chelek B'Nachala B'Biza, right? He doesn't get Nachala, he doesn't get the biza, like the spoils. So basically he has no way to get things other than these ways. So this connects with all those others, and this is for clothing. So Reshit Hagez, Noheg, Ba'aretz, U'b'chutz La'aretz, right? It shouldn't be dependent on location. B'fnei Abayit, V'shelo B'fnei Abayit, whether the Beit HaMikdash is existing or not. B'chulin, Aval lo B'mukdashim, it's only related to chulin, not mukdashim. Okay, the obvious reason would be why?
It's kadosh, it has to go anyhow.
What do you, no, well, if it's kadosh, what happens? It's for a sacrifice. If you remember, animals that are designated for sacrifices, you're not allowed to do gizava avodah. Remember, you can't shear them, and you can't work with them. You can't use them to work with. So obviously, you can't. The Gemara is going to get to a drasha about how we learn this and then say, well, why do you need a drasha? Isn't it obvious? Because you can't work those animals. You can't shear those animals anyway, but we'll get to it. Chomer b'zroa l'chayayim v'keva mirishit hagez. Now we're comparing it to last parak. So there's some chumra b'zroa l'chayayim v'keva that doesn't exist by rishit hagez. Shazroa l'chayayim v'keva, there's going to be two things. Nohagim b'bakar u'batzon. It's both bakar and son, right? The bigger animals or the smaller animals. U'bimirubeh u'bimaat. If you do a lot, right, you shecht a lot of animals, or even if you shecht just one animal, you have to give them matanot. Those are all the chayam and keva. V'reshit hagez, eno noheg ela b'recheilot. It's very specific to tzon, and with tzon we mean like kvasim family. Okay, not as specific as recheilot are, which is just feminine, female, but it could be scharim also. But it's the sheep family, like not even goats, you're not chayav. V'eno noheg ela b'merubeh. And only if you do a lot of shearing. Okay, now we're going to see what does that mean. V'kamahu merubeh, how many animals do you need to shear in order to be chayav? Beit Shammai Rim shtei recheilot. Shneamar, yechaye ish eglat bakar u'shtei tzon. Where do they get that it's merubeh? Because it says hatzon. It doesn't say, remember we had im shor, im seh, or right, in a lot of places it just gives a specific animal. That's singular. Here it says tzon. Tzon means a bunch of. So how much is a bunch? So Beit Shammai says, oh, two is already a bunch. Because we see from a pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, Egal bakar ushtei tzon. And there you have, even two is tzon. Ubeit Hillel, Rim, Chamesh, Shneamar, Chamesh tzon asuyot. Okay, this is with Avigail and Shmuel Aleph Perakafe. She brings Matayim Lechem Ushnayim Nivlei Yayim Bechamesh Tzon Asuyot. We'll get to in the Gemara what exactly the machloket is here. Gozizot, sorry, I skipped. Rabbi Dosa ben Hirkanus Omer, Chamesh Rechelot Gozizot Mane Mane Upras. Chayavot Bereshit HaGez. Is there a minimum amount? Like, let's say, you know, you can imagine there's a really small sheep and there's a really large sheep. So is there, when we say five, assuming we're going by Beit Hillel, do we say five of any amount? Or does there have to be a minimum? So what does he say? He says there has to be a minimum. Mane mane upras, which is, mane is 100 dinarim. Now, they measure, they talk about weight sometimes in coins, because how much did the coins weigh? So if you have 150 dinarim, the weight of that would be the amount that you need, okay? 150 in each, okay? So you'd have chamesh chilo gozob mane mane upras, right? That's 150. Some people say, because it says mane mane upras, it means 250. So there's machloket. Is it 250 or is it 150? And then there's a machloket. So how much is that? If you say it's 150 times 5 is 750 dinarim, and they say the weight of that is 3.18, about approximately, kilo. Sorry, I didn't say how much. 3.18 kilo is the amount that you need of the sheep to be sheared. Then you're chayav up reshit hages. The chachamim omrim, they disagree with Rabbi Dosa ben Hirkanus, and they say chamesh rechelot gozozot kol shehen. Okay? Any amount, it's going to be Rashi is going to say here, b'gemara mefarish maihi. The quote, when it says kol shehen, does it really mean kol shehen? Or is there some sort of shear, just a lower shear than the other? We saw this recently, where kol shehen didn't necessarily mean nothing, you know, almost nothing. V'kama notnim lo, how much do you have to give the kohen then, right? Just like truma, we have amounts, and all the other things, we have amounts, so how much do you have to give? Mishkal chamesh sleim b'yuda, shehen eser sleim b'galil. Okay, it's a weight of 5 slaim in Yehuda, which are equivalent to 10 slaim in the Galil, because their weights were different, right? The ratio was 2-1. And therefore, you know, depending on where you're living, they're giving you the amount that you need of slaim. Miluban velotsoi, it has to be whitened and not dirty, because dirty could weigh more, because it has dirt in it. Okay, so they have to be, the way it would be measured, right? It doesn't have to be that you have to give it to him whitened, but if it has dirt in it, you have to deduct that amount. That weight, kidei la'asot mimenu beged katan. And the shear is in order that he can make a small beged out of it, a small piece of clothing. How do we know this? Shenemar titen lo, we saw this before. What is titen lo? Shehebo kidei matana. That it has to be titen lo, give him something that's actually useful for him. So it's like, that would be like a gift, which means even a beged katan. Lo ispik litno lo ad shetzva'o. Now we have an interesting halacha. Let's say you didn't give it to him. And in the meantime, you dyed the wool. Well, if you dyed the wool, what'd you do? That's what we call in halacha, if you remember back in the Bavas, we learned this, shinoi maaseh. And if you do a shinoi maaseh, okay, let's compare this to stealing. If you steal something, you're supposed to return it. The pasuk says, ve'eshivetai zela asher gazal. If you do something to the item, it's no longer the zela asher gazal. You retain it. You have a certain amount of ownership. We call it kone b'shinoi maaseh. In which case, when it comes to gzela, you no longer have to return that object. What do we do? Well, we still make you. You don't gain because you stole and changed it. So now it's yours. Well, it's true, it's yours, but you have to return the value of it. Now, in this case, what's the issue? You changed it, so it's no longer the original thing. So this is. I'm going to give you two explanations here. We're going with the first. At this point, you should have to give the value of the kohen, like with the gzela, but what's the problem? Go back to Rav Chista. What did Rav Chista say? That it's mamon she'en lo tov'im. There's no one who can claim it, so you actually are exempted from doing it. Okay? That's one option. So therefore, right, ad shetzva'o, patur, right? So if you did it, lo yispik litno lo ad shetzva'o, you're patur to give it back. Another explanation is given. By the way, the Gemara in Bava Kama compares this to gazel. So the second explanation is going to say, oh, it's not like you were kone b'shinoi maaseh like zela. But what he says is, since you changed it, it's no longer reshit hagez. It's no longer the gez. You don't call it giza anymore once you've colored it. Once you've dyed it, it becomes dyed wool, right? Whereas before it was called the giza, the shearings, but you wouldn't call it shearings after that. So we call it pak'a mitzvata. The mitzvah is just no longer there anymore. There is no mitzvah. So then they say, well, how could you compare this to Bava Kama? They compare it to the Gezel case. And then we should go with our first explanation that it was kana obashino maase. So they say, no, also in Gezel, it's the same thing. What happened? Pak'a mitzvata. Heshivita gzela asher gazal. You no longer have the gzela asher gazal. So pak'a mitzvata there also. Okay? It's just there, you still have to return because you deprive someone of some money thing. Here, you don't have to again. Here, there's just no mitzvah anymore. Okay? And there, you didn't steal something from someone, so it's not like you have to worry about that. What's the nafkamina between the two? Well, when we learned about Rav Chisda, that he said it's Mamon She'en Lo Tovim, we suggested that maybe there was one way of reading it where one could say if all the kohanim gathered together and did it like a class action suit, they could, in theory, get the money. So maybe that would be only according to the first explanation, whereas the second explanation is there's actually no mitzvah at all. Okay. What if you didn't dye it, but livno velotzvo, you whitened it, meaning you washed it, you laundered it, but you didn't dye it? Ah, then you're chayav, because that's not shinoi maase, right? You haven't done anything different. It's still called the shearings, or it's still, depending on how you read it, or you didn't do a shinoi maase. Halokeh gez tsono shel ovei kochavim patur mireshit hagez. If you take the first shearings, you buy it from an ovei kochavim, well then you're not chayav, because his, right, what did it say? Reshit gez tsoncha, your tson and not a non-Jew's tson. What if you buy it from a Jew? So it depends. In other words, who's chayav now to give the reshit hages? So in shi'er ha-mocher, if he left over some of it for himself, chayav, then he's chayav, because whatever he left over was what he meant to give to the kohen, you know, even if it's not all of it, but you know, he has to give that amount, whatever the amount is, to the kohen. But lo shi'er ha-lokech chayav. But if he didn't leave anything over, right? Oh, I didn't read it right. It should be im shi'er, if the mocher left over some, ha mocher chayav. I should have read it that way, right? Then the mocher is chayav. Lo shi'er, if he sold the entire gez to someone, then halokeh chayav. Then basically the obligation passes on to the next person. Hayu lo shnei minim, shchufot ulevanot. If he had two types, okay, Rashi says, what shchufot? Lo shachor velo lavan. Okay, it's some other color. Maybe gray, maybe brown. Okay, I saw different explanations, but okay, let's just say brown. So if you have brown and white, machar lo shchufot avalo levanot, zcharim avalo nekevot. Okay, let's say he sold him only one type and not the other type. He sold him all the brown but none of the white, or all of the males and none of the females. Zenoten latzmo v'zenoten latzmo. That's not considered shi'er because each different type is chayav, has a separate chiyuv on it. So if he sold all the browns, well then the lokeach has to give on the browns, and the person who kept the whites, well, he has to do on the whites. Okay, they're not connected to each other. Okay, the Gemara starts off with what I mentioned earlier about this b'mukdashim. So the Mishnah said, b'chulin avalo b'mukdashim. B'mukdashim, my time alo. Why are mukdashim nachayavim reshit hagez? So what should it have said? Should have said, because mukdashim, you can't do gizah for them. So obviously, you're not going to be chayav. You're not allowed to shear them. But instead of saying that, the pasuk says tzoncha velo tzon hekdesh. We've seen this many times. If it says yours, it means yours, but not something that doesn't belong to you, like something you dedicated to the Beit HaMikdash, which wouldn't be belonging to you. So now the Gemara is going to ask, why did you even need this drasha? It should have been obvious. Tama dekatav rachmana tzoncha. The reason here, it seems clear, is that because the pasuk said soncha, which means halav hachi. If the pasuk hadn't said soncha, hava mina, what would we have thought? Kochim chayavim bereshit hagez. It would have implied that what? Kochim are chayavim bereshit hagez. And how could that possibly be? Halav b'nei gizaninu. You're not allowed to shear them. Dichtiv, how do we know? Because it says in the pasuk, v'lo tagoz b'chor tzoncha. You're not allowed to shear the b'chor of your tzon, because the b'chor is hekdesh, right? You have to bring it to the kohen and the Beit HaMikdash. So how could this be? So now they're going to say, and then we're going to have a big, long back and forth, okay? One's going to build on the other. We're going to have, you know, and this and then that and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so what are we going to say? First answer is this. Okay, we're going to have two different answers. The first answer is what we're talking about. Ibe kodshe mizbeach hachinami. You're right. If it was kodshe mizbeach, for sure, it's a sur because of avodah. It certainly can't be talking about that. You wouldn't need the pasuk tzoncha. It must be talking about, right, there's two types of kochim. One is I designate an animal to be used for a sacrifice. That for sure you can't do gizan avodah. That's like the b'chor. But if I say I'm sanctifying something to the berek habayit, which means I'm sanctifying the value of this animal to be used, meaning that in the end, what are you going to do? You're going to flip it on a coin, basically, and give that value to the Beit HaMikdash, or have the animal do stuff in the Beit HaMikdash, or whatever it might, right, carry things for the Beit HaMikdash. That means the animal doesn't have kedushat haguf, it's just its value is kadosh, but not its body. So we could say, oh, kodshei berek habayit, which, and the assumption right now is that what? Kodshei berek habayit aren't asurim b'gizav avodah, in which case, you specifically need, right, if since it's not asur b'gizav avodah, what would you have assumed? Maybe the first shearings would have to go to the kohen. So then they say, wait, v'hamar rabbi, is it Rabbi Lazar or Rabbi Elazar? Elazar. V'hamar rabbi Elazar, kodshei berek habayit asurim b'gizav avodah. But Rabbi Elazar said they are asurim b'gizav avodah, which means, again, we have no need for a special pasuk to tell you tzoncha, right, that Rishita gives. Obviously, you're not going to be chayav because they're asurim. So what did they answer? Oh, no. When Rabbi Elazar said they're asurim b'gizav avodah, he meant midurabanan, which means what? They're only asurim midurabanan. Now, if they're asurim midurabanan, what's going to happen? Well, on a doraita level, they might be chayav in gizav avodah if you were to shear them. You're not allowed to shear the midrabanan, but let's say you did anyway. So salkadat hachamina, you might have thought, ho'il mida oraita b'nei gizani, since mida oraita, you are allowed to shear them. Hecha de gazazle, if somebody went against the midrabanan and actually sheared them, leitivle, maybe you'd have to give them to the kohen. So then they say, but wait a minute. If you take this sheep that was designated to the Beit HaMikdash, how could you possibly give it to the kohen? V'ha kadishla. Isn't it sanctified to the Beit HaMikdash? How can you just say, oh, I'm going to give this to the Kohen? So, Sakadas HaChamina, what would you have thought? Again, this is all theoretical. What you would have thought, which necessitated the drasha of Tzoncha to teach you, no, you don't have to give it to the Kohen. But what might you have thought? Lifrok relatively. We would, what would we do? Oh, we obviously can't give it to the Kohen. It's Hekdesh. So what would we do? We redeem it, flip it onto a coin, right? So the coin now has the Kedusha in it. And now we give the shearings to the Kohen. So you'd have to redeem it into money value. That money value goes to the Beit HaKabayit. The shearings would then go, so of the shearings, the first of the shearings would go to the Kohen, right? A certain percentage or a certain weight. So, but then they say, no, how could you have redeemed that stuff? We've learned that anything animal related has to be stood up and evaluated. If you remember, we had this whole thing, what if the animal's dying and it can't stand up anymore? So it needs to stand up. Now, obviously, shearings can't stand up to be evaluated, right? So which means you can't redeem them. If you can't redeem them, then obviously you can't give them to the kohen. And what would be the havamina then? Hani chalaman damar kodshe bet kabayit lo havu bechlal hamadav haracha. So we can explain. If you hold, right, there's a machloket about this. If you hold kodshe bet kabayit, when we talk about hamadav haracha, it's only kodshe mizbech. Kodshe bet kabayit don't need to be stood up, in which case then you can explain. Then you would have thought that we'd have to redeem these. And then that would explain why we need a special pasuk to tell you no. Ela laman damar hayu, that they are part of bechlal hamadav haracha, ma'ika lamemer, what could you possibly say? So, Amar of many Barpatish, Mishum Rabbi Yanai, Hacha b'magdish behem tola berek habayit, chutz migizotea. It's a case where somebody said, I'm sanctifying this animal to the berek habayit, the animal itself, but not the shearings. Now, you might laugh, but what does this mean? We do this all the time. Somebody sells their field, but not for payrot, right? I'm selling you the field, or he just sells the payrot, right? We had this recently. Think where someone gives a mashkon and you can get payrot from it, right? I give you this field as a collateral.
It wasn't recently.
I was teaching it somewhere else then. I was trying to think, where did I teach this? I taught it somewhere else. Anyway, you would give as collateral, you took a loan, you would give as collateral it was mashkanta de surah. You would give someone your tree or your land. They would eat all the fruits, and that would be against the loan, basically. So they would keep eating fruits every year. Eventually, they would eat the value of what the loan was. So here you would say, oh, I'm sanctifying this to the Beit HaKabayit, but other than the Gizah, in which case it wasn't, right? Salkadat HaChamina. So then you would have thought in that case, Ligzos Velatively. And now you don't need Pidyon, right? That would resolve the Pidyon. You can't do Pidyon because it can't stand up. Oh, you don't do Pidyon because it wasn't even sanctified in the first place. And therefore, Amar Krat Soncha Velo Tzon Shel Hekdesh. Okay, sounds like we're getting to an answer, but no. What's the problem then? Well, first of all, ina ihachi. If that's the case, then you could say kochem is be'achnami. You could say someone sanctified an animal to be sacrificed on the altar, but said, I'm sanctifying it except for the shearings, which means until such time as you use it, the shearings aren't sanctified. So they say, oh, no, you can't do it for Kodesh HaMizbeach. Why not? Kach sheh. Okay, there was an opinion. Not everybody agreed with this. But the shearings actually, when you shear the sheep, does it weaken the animal? So if it weakens the animal, and the animal was designated for a sacrifice, well, you're by shearing it, you're actually weakening the animal. So even if you were to say, chutz migizotea, it would also include Kodesh HaMizbeach, right? This is all a question. It wouldn't include that. This is all a question on, once we said it's chutz migizotea, then why did you have to say it specifically Berech HaBayit? You could have also said it's also Kodesh HaMizbeach. So I say, oh no, because there it weakens the animal. But then also Kodesh Berech HaBayit, nami kach sheh. In other words, we're going to basically say, if you say it's just this one, that one, well, applies equally to both. You can't weaken something you sanctify for Berech HaBayit either. Then again, you're kind of tearing away at what was Hekdesh. Damar chutz migizau chisha. So the case would be where you said, I'm sanctifying to Berech HaBayit other than shearings and other than any weakening that will come along with the shearings. So then you could do it. Well, then, again, go flip back to the other side. Kodesh HaMizbeach nami damar chutz migizau chisha. So then you could say it would be the same thing. If I sanctify an animal for a sacrifice, but I said other than its shearings and its weakening, then that should work. And then again, we would need the pasuk also for that case and not just for the Berech HaBayit. So what do they say? No, afilu hachi pashtak shtusha bekula. When it comes to the mizbeach, when I sanctify that animal, I sanctified, I didn't sanctify the whole thing, but it applies to the whole thing, which means I can't weaken it at all. I'm not allowed to do that. When it comes to Berech HaBayit, I can. Why? How do we know this? Minatim, or where do we know this from? Tam Rabbi Yossi, halo b'mukudashim, ha'omer raglash shel zo ola, kula ola. Rabbi Yossi says, if I take a behema and I say the leg of this animal is for korban ola, well then the entire animal becomes sanctified for a korban ola, not just the leg. Va'afilu l'Rabbi Meir, and even Rabbi Meir disagrees with Rabbi Yossi, damar ein kula ola, it's not the case. Hanemile, that's only in a case where raglash shel zo, which is what? Da'aktish davar she'ein ha'neshama tluyabo. The animal wouldn't die if I cut the leg off. Again, if you do it the arkuva, remember that was a treifa dafka because that would cause the animal to die. But assuming we're talking about a part of the leg that wouldn't cause the animal to die, that then doesn't apply to the whole animal. Aval hikdish davar shaneshama tluyabo kidsha. Now, what did you do in this case? You said the entire animal other than giza and chisha, right, and weakening it. That obviously then means all the parts of the animal that haneshama tluyaba, which means that you've basically, by doing that, even Rabbi Meir would agree, the entire animal is sanctified, in which case you can't, your t'nai that you said, or your stipulation that it was other than the following things, right, can't apply for chisha, because the whole body of the animal is sanctified, including the fact that you can't weaken it anymore. So therefore, if you say chutz migizau chisha, that would only be a stipulation that would be relevant for Kodesh Berech HaBayit, which are not kadosh kedushat haguf, and therefore don't have this law about it, whereas when you have something that's sanctified its body, then it's going to apply to the entire thing, even if you don't say the entire thing. Okay, that was all to explain, okay, a very long explanation of what case of Mukdashim are we talking about that you needed this pasuk of Tzoncha instead of just assuming it was obvious. So the reason is, it's Kodesh Berech HaBayit if you said Chutz Migizau Chisha. Okay. Rava Amar B'Makdish Giza Atzma. He's saying, no, I'll give you a better explanation. Your makdish, not the animal for the, right, and the giza we're talking about. It's a case where, right, we said chutz migizav avadah. It's a case where you were makdish, just the shearings. You didn't sanctify the animal. If you sanctify the animal, for sure, it wouldn't be relevant, right? Obviously, you wouldn't have to need a pasuk. It would be obvious it was excluded. But what if you said, I'm sanctifying the shearings themselves? That you would have to, right? You say, I'm taking the sheep and I'm sanctifying the shearings of the sheep. So what would you have to do? We think that what? You would have to shear them, right? Then redeem some of them and give those to the Kohen. So therefore, Amar Krah, now he's going to learn it not from Tzoncha. He learns it from a different pasuk. Gez Tzoncha titein li. Okay, the first of your shearings you should give me. Right? It is the same pasuk. It's just darshaning without the reshi. Okay, right. It's the same thing. It's saying, Gez Tzoncha titein li, meaning, but he's darshaning it differently. Not from the Tzoncha, but from the Gez of your Tzon you have to give me. You have to give to the Kohen, titein lo. Mi she'ein mechusar ela gzizau nitina. What do you see here? The gez, you have to give. Meaning, you have to give the gez as soon as you shear it. In this case, what do you have to do? You'd have to shear it, right? Yatsa zeh shebechusar gziza, bdiya unetina. You'd have to shear it, redeem it, and then give it. That's excluded. Okay? That's his drasha. Ela tzoncha lamai ata. So then what do you need tzoncha for? L'chiditanya for the following drasha. Braita. Behemat ha-shutafin chaya bereshit ha-gez. Okay, if you jointly own an animal, you're still chayav in reshit ha-gez. Rabbi Eli poter. He says, no, you're pater if you jointly own it. My time is Rabbi Eli. Amar krat, soncha velo shel shutafut. He says, ah, what does it mean, soncha? Soncha, according to this, doesn't mean your tzon and not hekdesh. Soncha means, again, this is Rava's understanding, that it's gez soncha titein lo is the way we darshan it. He says, no, it's soncha, meaning only your own, not if you share it. If you jointly own it, you're patur. Chachamim, what do they do with soncha? Chachamim say, Rabbanan, lemi'utei shutfut ovei kochavim. They say, oh no. If you jointly own it with a Jew, of course you're chayav. That's included in soncha. But soncha means your tzon and not one you jointly own with a non-Jew. Then you'd be patur from reshit ha-gez. So now, Rabbi Eli, shutfut ovei kochavim minale, where does he learn that from? That you're not chayav? Nafka lemi resha dekra. Ah, look at the beginning of the pasuk. It says, reshit gancha, by truma it says, the first of your dagan. What does he darshan from there? The lo shutfut ovei kochavim. That means if you don't share it with an ovei kochavim. V'rabanan, okay, now, so what does he say? Look at the pasuk. It starts off with reshit gancha. That excludes an anju. When you get to the second part of the pasuk, reshit gez soncha, and again it seems to say only yours and not someone else's. Well, if you want to say not shutfut ovei kochavim, we can already learn it from what we call a hekesh. The beginning of the pasuk and the end of the pasuk must be talking about the same thing. So therefore, reshit gancha already excludes shutfut ovei kochavim. When you get to the tzoncha the second time, what must exclude something different? What's that? Shutfut with a Jew. Rabbanan, who don't think that, they think truma in the beginning excludes non-Jew, and at the end it excludes a non-Jew, tzoncha, right? Degancha excludes a non-Jew, and tzoncha excludes a non-Jew. So why don't they learn one from the other? Rabbanan, reshit hifsika inyan. If it had just said, reshit gancha tirashcha v'yitzarecha, v'gez tzoncha titein lo, then we'd assume we can learn one from the other. But since it says in the middle of the pasuk, v'reshit gez tzoncha, that means it's already separating it, which means that when we have tzoncha, now it teaches you the same thing, you wouldn't be able to learn one from the other. Rabbi Eli, so what does he do with the reshit tifsika inyan? Vav hadar arve. It split the pasuk by saying, reshit gez tzoncha, but then it then said, oh, but we're connecting it because of the vav. V'reshit. The v'reshit connects them, in which case you could learn one from the other. B'rabbanan, what will they say about the vav? Well, they say that doesn't make any sense to darshan that. Why? Just simply don't, if you wanted to split it and then connect them back together, well, why'd you bother doing that? Why don't you just do nothing, right? Lo nechtav rachmana lo vav v'lo reshit. And then if you really wanted them to be connected, it would have gotten rid of, right? That whole word would have been, that word which is made up of two parts, one to split and one to share. Well, you would just not have it. Rabbi Eli, so according to Rabbi Eli, now we have to explain, why does it have the vit reshit, right? One to split and then one to reconnect. Why would you do that? Because the two things are very different. What's the difference between truma and reshit ha-gez? The truma is kadosh kedushat ha-guf. Remember, if you disqualify, you have to burn it, right? If it gets tameh, that's kedushat ha-guf. And reshit ha-gez only has its value as kadosh. So I did the high kedushat tamim, but high kedushat ha-guf, Pasuk Luvada Arvelahu. It wanted to show you that these two aren't exactly the same. One is Kedushat Aguf and one is Kedushat, that its value is holy. And therefore, it separated them, but then brought them together to say that the halachot in terms of shutfut are the same. Right? That they're both not relevant for Shutaf Agoy again. And then what did he say? The whole thing was to say, why do we need Soncha? According to Chachamim, Soncha was just not shutfut with Ovei Kochavim. According to Rabbi Eli, because we already learned that from the beginning, soncha must be to say not even shutfut with a Jew. You have shutfut with a Jew, you're already patur from reshit ha-gez. That was one explanation. Now, and that was all, and then we had to explain, according to Rabbi Eli and his machloka with Chachamim, what did we say? That Chachamim say that the second part, right, soncha is l'ma'et shutfut ovei kochavim, and reshit ha-gez hipsika inyan. Now we're going to have a different explanation for Chachamim. Why don't we learn it? The whole thing was, why didn't Rabbanan learn it from Truma? And the answer was, because Reshit split. Remember? Ibai Tema, another explanation could be, Shutfut Ovei Kochavim B'Truma Rabbanan Chiyuvei Mechayve. We don't learn it from Truma simply because Truma, it's the opposite. Okay? We can't learn it from Shutfut of Havei Kochavim, because if you have Shutfut with Havei Kochavim, you're actually Chayav in Truma. How do we know this? Detanya, Yisrael v'Ovei Kochavim shelakhu sadeh b'shutfut. Let's say they purchase a field together, jointly. Okay, we're going to see a machloket, but according to both opinions, you have to take Truma. Okay, I'm going to kind of read to the end and then work our way backwards explaining this, because it's a bit complicated. Tevel v'chulim muravin zeh bazeh, meaning that you have, right, part of it's tevel, part of it is chayav and trumot u'masron, and part of it isn't, because 50-50 owned by a Jew. So 50-50, right, 50 of it is tevel, divrei rebbe, which means it's chayav and trumot u'masron, even though you own a b'shutfut. Ravan Shim ben Gamliel omer shel Yisrael chayav shel ovei kochavim patur. The part that was the Jews is chayav, and the part that the ovei kochavim is patur. Again, we're going to see what the machloket is in a minute. Ad kan lo pligi, and as what their machloket? Their machloket is ela demar savar yesh brera, umar savar ein brera. Hold off for 1 minute, I'll explain. Aval shoot, and as their machloket was all about is there brera, isn't there brera, which I'll explain. Aval shoot foot ovei kochavim, divrei kol chayav, but all of them agree that this is a field that's mishutaf and you're chayav in trumot u'masrot. It's just a matter of how do you handle it. Okay? Yeah. What's the machloket between them? So again, this is all to say, again, I just want to keep on track. That's why before I explain, I want to keep on track. This was to say, why did Chachamim not learn the p'tur of shutfut of avei kochavim from Truma? The reason is, maybe he held like these Tanaim that said you're chayav in Truma. Now, what's the issue here? So, let's start with Rav Moshe ben Gamliel. He holds yesh brera. What's brera? That's when, remember, you want to drink your wine and you haven't taken Truman Umasro yet, but you're not in a place where you can take Truman Umasro because you don't have anywhere to put the wine, right? You can't spill it on the floor. It's Truman Umasro. So what do? You say, I'm drinking now, right? But you say before, well, part of this will be. The problem is when you're drinking, everything gets mixed up. Maybe you're eating the stuff. You're drinking the Truma. So what is it? It's that once you later designate the Truma, it was as if retroactively it was separated already from the beginning. Even though it's, right, what's the problem here? That you might actually be drinking, right? There's no actually designated part. So what's the issue here? Since we don't know who owns which part of the field, how do you do Trumot u'Masrot? So if you hold Yesh Brera, I have to bring up another thing. If half of this is Chayav and half is Pator, but we don't know which half is Chayav, which half is Pator, what's the problem? You can't be Mafrish, Mina Pator ala Chayuv, Mina Chayuv ala Pator. Remember, you're not allowed to take Truma of stuff that's chayav in truma to separate for fruits that are not chayav in truma, and the reverse. You can't take from fruits that are exempt from truma and be mafrish on those that are chayav in truma. And in this case, right, so if you hold yesh brera, then we can say when he separates it, he's designating that this, right, that 50% of this that eventually the Yisrael will eat is going to be my 50% right now. Even though I don't see which 50% is mine, I can be mafrish this truma on the fact that the rest, right, I know which is mine, which isn't mine. You can say in theory, right, like every gargir has 50-50 of it, right? So some people, right, the question is how much you have to be mafrish on. You mafrish on the entire thing because you're saying, I'm separating this, and part of it's chayav, and part of it's pator, and the chayav part is going on the chayav part, and the pator part is going on the pator part, and view it like that, or are you saying, I'm separating this, and this, in essence, becomes mine, and that also designates which part I'm doing it on that was mine, but again, it's all theoretical, and that's why you'd have to hold yesh brera. Tanaka, Rebbe says, no, tevel uchulam uravin zebazen, there's no way to do brera, okay, because we don't hold brera, they're all mixed up. So now, what does this mean? So what do you do? So Rashi says, if you look in the first wide line in Rashi, he says, "Vani shamati she'ein lo takana." This means basically you're stuck. There's nothing you can do. In other words, Lisha, I heard, meaning someone taught me this. Okay, that's one masoret I heard. But actually, Rashi says, "Lina reshi yesh lo takana b'shnei tzedim." You can do it in two different ways. One is if you have tevel mimakom acher mafrish al zelafi chetzio. You say, well, 50% of this is mine. I'll take some truma from somewhere else, and I'll be mafrish from there on 50% of this. And then, you know, that can work, right? The whole problem was, if you're mafrish from one part of the field that's shared, then you don't know, am I mafrish, is this patur, is this chayav what I'm holding? But if you take from something that's 100% yours, then you can do that. And his second explanation was, where's the second?
I remember. Then you can say, "Ani makne ze latzmi bishvila."
But you can. It's not yours to be makne.
Well, you can arrange it. I mean, it's not like they're talking to each other.
Yeah.
Right. You'd have to arrange it then. You'd have to say, I'm taking this part to be mine. Right. Okay. And then I forgot his second explanation. But he gives two ways of how you could do it. Okay. So now, so this was all to say that that's why. Okay. So that's another explanation. So one explanation is say he doesn't learn it from Truma because Reshit breaks the Pasuk. And therefore you need a separate drasha. The second is to say he doesn't learn from Truma because Truma is the opposite. And the third answer, V'ibay Tema, Travayu l'Rabbi Eli mitzoncha nafka. Rabbi Eli actually learns from the word soncha both. Both shutafut of an Ovei Kochavim and both shutafut of a Jew. Shutafut Ovei Kochavim, my time, de lo miyachtale, right? What's the reason? Soncha, it's not your tzon. It's not miyucha b'shvilcha. You share it with a non-Jew. You could say, l'Yisrael nami lo miyachtale, right? So basically, it's saying, this whole explanation is not saying why he doesn't learn from Truma. This explanation is saying, what's the machloka Rabbi Eli and Chachamim? The really Rabbi Eli is darshning soncha to say, not any kind of shutfut, right? Before we said he learns one from Truma of the Yoved Kochavim, and therefore this one is free, and therefore we must learn this to Israel. Now we say, here he learns the whole thing to any kind of shutfut. The Rabbanan, they say no. Oved Kochavim lav bar chiyuvahu. And therefore, since he's not chayav, therefore you're not chayav. But Yisrael bar chiyuvahu, but since Yisrael is a bar chiyuvah, right, he's chayav in Reshit Hagez, and you're chayav in Reshit Hagez, so your shutafut is going to be chayav in Reshit Hagez. Amar Rava. Now we're going to talk about Rabbi Eli according to this last explanation. According to this, we're going to say, well, mode Rabbi Eli betruma, af agav dechtiv digancha, didcha in de shutafut lo, even though, now if you say tzoncha means it has to be belonging to you 100% and not anybody else, well then what would you say? You'd say them by truma only if it belongs to you. But if it's shutafut, no, right? You would think, also you're not chayav in truma of shutafut. And nobody says that, right? What did we say? Maybe you can learn from truma if you have shutafut with an obey kochbim. That was a machloket. But everyone thinks if you have shutafut with a Jew, of course you're chayav in truma. So why is that? Even though it says digancha. So. Katav Rachman, and now we're going to say, even Rabbi Eli who holds that by Reshit Hagez, it's any kind of shutafut exempts you. It's only going to be by Reshit Hagez. We're going to see all these other cases where it seems to indicate something in Yechidut, right? So, like Tzoncha, Digancha, it sounds like only if it's yours. And yet, he's still going to hold, if you're with together with a Jew, you're Chayav. Why? Because in this case, Katav Rachman, Trumotechem. Ah, it also says in another place, your trumot birabim. This is plural. Trumot that belong to you, plural, the plural you. Okay, so we're going to have a whole slew of these cases. We're not even going to finish them all today. Okay, of all these cases where it seems to say individual, but then there's going to be some pasuk which teaches otherwise. Ela degan chalamali. So then what do you have degan cha for? If it's not to say, well, it has to exclusively belong to you. Limiute shutfut ovei kochavim. Okay, it's to exclude shutfut of an ovei kochavim. Chala, af agav dechtiv reshit. Okay, so now, by chala, it says reshit. So now, what would you write? Reshit arisotechem. So what would you have thought? Yikalamemar, neelaf reshit, reshit, me reshit agez. Ma lahalan deshutfut lo, af kan deshutfut lo. According to Rabbi Eli, who thinks that reshit agez excludes any, is not included in any kind of partnership, and it says reshit there, so wouldn't you assume reshit agez also? Reshit arisotechem by the chala also. If you jointly own a loaf of bread, you have a shared bakery, you wouldn't have to take chala. Kata rachmana arisotechem. Because it says arisotechem, again, it's birabim, your plural arisot, your doughs, therefore we're going to assume it includes. But they said, wait a minute. Ela tama dechtiv arisotechem halap hachi avamina nelef reshit reshit mirishit ages. Why are you assuming if it didn't have a risotechem, you would have learned it from Reshit Hagez? Adraba, nelef mi truma. And truma, what did we say? Shutfut with a Jew, you are chayav. So why wouldn't we learn chala straight from truma? Hachinami, you're right. You could have learned it straight from truma. So therefore, we're left with what is a risotechem doing for you? Then you don't really need it. You could say Reshit, we learned from truma. That, again, what did we learn? That, even if you have shutfut with a Jew, you're chayav. El arisotechem lamali, it's a famous halacha, we've learned this before. Kedei arisotechem, how much do you need to be chayav in chala? You need kedei arisotechem. Now, who is Moshe talking to? The Dor HaMidbar when he said this. Right? He was talking to people in the desert. In the desert, how much did they have every day? They had an omer lugugolet. How much is an omer? Asirita eifa. That's the amount you're chayav for truma. For chala. If you make a dough, that's a tenth of an ephah, which they say is 43 and a fifth beitzim of the midbar beitzim. And then there's this whole debate, and that's why nowadays we have this whole debate, exactly at which shear do you have to take, right? Often we take certain shear, we take challah without a bracha, and then we take later with a bracha. There's whole safek about exactly how much these 43 and a fifth beitzim are worth. Okay, so that's an aside. Pe'ah. Okay, Pe'at Sadcha, it says. So that sounds like only if you individually own a field, right? Avagav Dichtiv Sadcha, Ditcha in Shutfu Lo. Remember, this is only all according to Rabbi Eli, who thinks that right, Soncha means not any Shutfu. So now he says it sounds like if you're in a partnership with someone in a field, you wouldn't be Chayav in Pe'at. Katav Rachmana, Ubekur Tzachem et Ktsir Artzachem, your land in plural. So there it shows, even together with a Jew. Ela sadcha lamali. So then again, what is sadcha coming to exclude? Lemiute shutfut ovei kochavim. Okay, if you have a field that you jointly own with a non-Jew, then you're not chayav in pe'ah. Bechora. Okay, when it comes to the bechor, the animals you're supposed to give to the kohen. Af agav dechtiv kol bechor asher yivaled bibekarcha uvitzoncha. What does it sound like? In your cattle, your flock. Didcha in de shutfulo, according to Rabbi Eli. But katav rachmana ubechoro bekarchem utzonchem. There's another pasuk that says plural. Ela becharcha vetzoncha lamali. So what do we need that for? Again, lemiute shutfulo vekochavim. If you're together with a non-Jew, you don't have to do it. Mezuzah afa bidichtiv beitcha. So what would you think, right? Mezuzah beitecha. Beitecha means your house, right? Your individual. Shutfut. Didcha in, only if it's yours, but shutfut lo, you wouldn't be chayav and mezuzah if you jointly own a house with someone. Katav rachmana, this is a weaker one. Limayin yugvu yimechem v'yimebnechem. So that your days will be longer, yours and your children's. Okay, right after mezuzah, it says it. So therefore, you see, it's
somebody
plural.
Else is involved.
Even though, right, exactly. It's a little weaker. Ela beitcha lamai ata. Okay, now here you're going to see a famous halacha we all know. What does Beitcha come for? L'chidah rabba d'amar rabba, derech b'yatcha min hayimim. Where do you put the mezuzah? On the right-hand side. Why do you put it on the right-hand side? Because Beitcha means the way you walk into your house. And the assumption is, Rashi explains it, that when you walk into your house, raglad yamina al b'resha, normally you put your right foot forward first. Okay, try this at home, see if that's really true. Do you put your right foot forward first? And therefore, since you put your right foot forward first, therefore the mezuzah should be on the right side. And that we learn from Beitcha, which means the way you go into your house. Okay, and therefore we don't learn it to exclude shutfut. Okay, we'll continue with these drashot tomorrow.